thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak here today. And I have to turn it on besides turning it off. Mute.
You're good.
Is it good?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't tell. All I can hear is me talking, so. Well, Grace and I left the U.S. in January to go over to Rwanda, and we were there for 4 months, pretty much to the day. And we were there to work with the Church of the Brethren. We have four countries there. And so you show you the general picture of Africa here.
Let me see your mic here. I thought you were good, but now it says you're not. Okay, you should be good now.
Well, only God is good.
God's good all
But if you could look at the map here, you can see Congo is kind of the bigger country in the center. And we have about 10 churches in Congo, but they're over on the eastern side. And it's a little hard to tell from the map there, but there is Burundi, Rwanda, and Uganda just on the east side or the right of that. And I think that this slide might show you a little bit better, because there is Congo is the big country. And then here is Burundi, Rwanda, and Uganda right above that. So we have 49 churches in Burundi. And this is kind of amazing because we didn't even know that they existed until last year. They started in 2015 with a couple of churches, and it's kind of exploded since then. And sometime early last fall, I got a text from one of our pastors in Congo who was working in Burundi. He got a job there. And he said, "Did you know about the Church of the Brethren in Burundi?" And I said, "No, we don't have a Church of the Brethren in Burundi." He says, "Well, at that time they had, I think, about 30 churches." So he put me in contact with the lead pastor, Expert Bikini, and I'll show his picture here in a moment or two. But anyway, since then we've met together and we've been there, and it's just amazing what God is doing there, which is Burundi is the second poorest country in the world. I'm assuming that Congo is the poorest. But, you know, all of Central Africa is extremely poor. But we were stationed, I guess you would say the word, we stayed in Rwanda in the town of Gisenyi. But we also, there's four churches there in Rwanda. And then there are, we think there's 10 churches, that sounds like the right number, in Uganda. And Grace and I visited there as well. And if you've followed at all on my writings, and I think you've been sending them out by email, at least here to the congregation. Now, Grace and I came up with the term "in the shadow." That's how we titled it. And we're in the shadow of this volcano, Mount Nyiragongo. And you might remember May a year ago, there was a volcanic eruption in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That was Mount Nyiragongo. And so where we were living in Gisenyi was only a few yards from the Congo border. And it's 10 miles, 9.8 to be exact, from where we were living to the center of the volcano. At least that's what Google Maps told me. It was 9.8 miles to the center of the volcano. So we were actually very close. The volcano itself did not directly affect our churches in Congo or Rwanda, but there was an earthquake that went with it too, and that caused some significant damage there in the area. And this is just a telephoto lens type of a picture of the volcano there. So Ron, who was on the left, he is the lead pastor of the Church of the Brethren in Congo. And the next to him is Etienne Nsanzimana from Rwanda. And he is the pastor that we actually lived with, him and his wife. We call them Mama and Papa Timo. And then there is Expert Bukene, who is the lead pastor in Burundi. He calls himself the Bishop Expert Bikini, and he is over these 49 churches in Burundi. And then this is Cedrak, Bombale Cedrak, who is the lead pastor in Uganda. And this is another one of those interesting little stories where he just sort of almost appeared out of nowhere. A pastor from the U.S. whose son was doing some college studies in Uganda found out that there was a Church of the Brethren about 3 years ago in Uganda. And of course, he tells his father, did you know that there's a Church of the Brethren in Uganda? Well, no. And nobody else here knew about it either. So he was able to make a visit there and made the contact and was back a second time. And then I was able to meet him 2 years ago when I was in Rwanda. He came to see me. And so we've kind of made these contacts. And they have 10 churches. They have a couple of schools. They have an orphanage and just a lot of really great work that's happening there. This is Expert Bikini with his wife, Agnes. They have four daughters. It's a really lovely family, very talented musical family. They all sing, play instruments, and Agnes is a fantastic worship leader. She's there leading the choir and singing, and just she's a good cook, too. See, I stayed in their house for a week, so I got well acquainted with them. This is Ron, who is the lead pastor in Congo, I'd mentioned earlier, and his wife, Mwangaza. And their youngest baby, whose name is Marla. There's a pastor from the U.S., Marla Abey, that she and I have been there different times, and they named the baby after her. This is Ron's family. They have, I think, around 10 children of their own, but they also have a couple of adopted children. This picture is actually a couple years old. I wasn't able to go to Congo on this trip. I didn't get the visa. Long story, but it's always a problem getting a Congo visa. And we were in Rwanda. Burundi, you can fly into the airport, you can land, they'll give you a visa. You have to pay for it, but you can get a visa. Same way with Uganda, we got it ahead of time online, no problem, but Congo doesn't work that way. Well, we're going to see a few pictures here from Burundi. The Burundi, this is kind of the main church, I guess you would say, here where the pastor lives. Right next to his house is this church building, and it's sort of a weird building, would be my description of it. The front section here is not very deep. It's maybe only 12 feet deep. It's three stories high. They want to put glass on the front of it. At the top, there is a lighted cross, which is basically the Church of the Brethren logo. And they're really excited to be a part of the Church of the Brethren. He only found out about the COB in 2015 when someone gave him a book, and the book was titled A Dunker's Guide to Brethren History. And he basically fashioned this church out of that book. He made a few mistakes along the way, and we're working with that. It's all part of the process. But really exciting work happening there, fantastic people. But anyway, getting back to this building, you step across the drainage ditch to get into it. There's no, ramp or walkway or anything. You just kind of very carefully get over and hope you don't, trip or something. It's not handicap accessible. This is inside. There's like a concrete floor with steps that go down with every row of chairs. These are I call the African church pews. Whoever invented plastic chairs, he's probably making a lot of money because that's what they have everywhere, all over Africa. I did a session, Etienne, Pastor Etienne from Rwanda, he and I went there together, so we were able to do some training sessions with the pastors there and their church leaders. They like blue suits for whatever reason. They gave me a blue suit, and they gave me a pink necktie. I hadn't worn a necktie for probably 35 years. But I did wear it there, at least to keep them happy. This is the pastor's house. And you won't be able to see this other than you can tell there's a little round thing up there towards the top, like a ventilator. That is actually a car rim. They're really good at recycling. This is one of their world churches. I said they had 49, and they are scattered around mostly western Burundi. The country as a whole is around the size of Maryland in terms of square miles, but it's fairly compact together. It's not, as long as what Maryland is. But here in this western portion, it's very rural, and they have churches scattered around with a young pastor over each church. But this man is one of the senior pastors. We might call him a district executive or something like that, but he is overseeing the younger pastors in the districts that they have set up there in the church. This is another one of the rural churches. The sign says Church of the Brethren in four languages, in English, French, Swahili, and Kirundi, which is their local language. another one of the rural churches. The roof had blown off recently, just a mud brick building, very crude building to start with, very small congregation. This was, I would point out that we were there on a weekday, so it wasn't like we were expecting them to, you know, have the whole congregation there. Another one of the churches, this is in a small town, and I've said, well, this one might benefit if the roof blew off of it too, but very, very simple buildings, but they can pack a lot of people in there, and they make good use of the space that they have, because even though it's packed full of people, they still jump around and dance around and really have quite a vibrant worship and all of that. This little church meets in a house. The lady standing was going to one of the other churches, which was quite a distance away, and so she insisted that they start a church in her village, which they did. It meets in her house, and they had recently bought some land on which they planned to build a church building when they had the time and the money. Another church building here, this is the Katoomba Church of the Brethren. It's right along the Congo border. And this was on Sunday morning there at the church in Bujumbura. They call it the Gahosha Church of the Brethren. And this young couple was getting married later in the week. So they paraded them in, carrying them on these chairs, and just kind of fussed over them a little bit and had a prayer blessing on them. And it was really kind of an exciting thing to see. And I looked at Etienne, because he was sitting next to me, I said, have you seen this done before? He says, oh yeah, we do that in our church too. I just hadn't seen it done before. So it's pretty cool. And you might not be able to see real well from where you're sitting what that is. But they brought that out at lunchtime, there when it was time to eat, the rest of the church. And the day before, we were visiting some of the rural churches, and we brought two roosters back with us in the back of the car. And so I looked over to Pastor Bukene. I said, is that those two roosters that we brought back yesterday? And he said, yes. They roasted them whole. I mean, literally, with the guts in. And they had some toothpicks to prop the head up. And then they draped it with spaghetti noodles that had been cooked with red beets. And, of course, I was the honored guest, so I get the first piece. But it was good. A little chewier than what we're used to, but, you know, I've eaten enough bushmeat that, you know, I'm okay with that. Well, also, along with the meal, they cooked 110 pounds, 50 kilograms of rice, and 40 kilograms of beans. And there were no leftovers. I'm not sure what else, forget what all the vegetables were and other things that they had, but there was, I think we got enough to eat, but like I said, there was no leftovers. The church also operates there in Bujumbura, Burundi, a medical clinic. They do some minor surgeries and consultations. They have a birthing room, and it's pretty completely stocked place as far as medicines and that sort of thing go, at least in a an African sense. It wouldn't be real satisfactory here probably, but I was impressed. Well, also in Burundi, the Church of the Brethren supports, through another organization, some farming training projects, kind of community development type things. And so I had been there a couple years before to look over some Farming God's Way teaching that had been happening there. And Farming God's Way is basically a conservation agriculture program that teaches a holistic view of creation and our role of responsibility as stewards of God's creation. But so it helps the farmer to be able to do no-till farming without what we would consider to be modern equipment. You know, they don't have 8-row corn planters, 4-row corn, they don't even have 2-row corn, they don't even have 1-row corn planters. They just have people with a hoe. And, you know, they don't have computerized GPS systems or sprayers or any of that kind of stuff. Everything's done by hand. And so this was one of those projects we'd seen before, but I could tell the difference that it's covering a lot more area now, a lot more people are involved with it than what had been in the past. So that was exciting to see. And it's just a couple of pictures of that work there. Well, now we're going to go to Uganda. And this is where Pleasant Ridge comes into the story at, because you sent $500 and Stone Bridge sent $500, and Southern PA District churches had sent $500. So we were able to buy Bibles. Pastor Sedrak had asked me ahead of time if we would be able to send some money so they could buy Bibles, that when we would come there as a team to visit, that we could take the Bibles from church to church. So you guys responded generously, and we were able to buy those Bibles. And that's what we are doing here in these two churches. Neither of them have a church building. The one has four walls, or maybe three and a half walls or something like that, and just a tarp. And while the other one, their building was destroyed in a storm, and they just have tarps. David Sollenberger, who is the Church of the Brethren annual conference moderator this year, he and his wife and Gordon Hoffert, who was that pastor from Minnesota I mentioned about that had got the original connection with the Uganda church, along with Marla Abey and Caleb Sylvanus Dokwak, who is a pastor in Nigeria with the Church of the Brethren, they all came together and we were able to visit churches in Uganda and in Rwanda. So they were all part of this team as we visited from church to church and we presented Bibles to them. And the lady in red there, she is Sedrak's wife, Diana, and they have a baby girl who is, about 3 years old, named Rose. And that's one thing that Sedrak asked us was to pray for them, because he wants to have a big family. So this church, we were unable to get to by vehicle, except we took motorcycles. In Uganda, they call the motorcycle taxis boda boda, which means border to border. In Rwanda, they call them motos, just short for motorcycle. But here, we took the boda boda ride up to the church. And I had a bag. I have a little black, like a computer bag type of thing. It was packed full of Bibles. So I'm carrying that on the motorcycle. And there were three of us on the motorcycle, and I'm trying to not lean over too much the wrong way through these narrow pathways up there to the mountain. This one, Grace and I call the mud church. And they had half a roof on the building and just a dirt floor, and it rained the night before, so it was pretty muddy. And of course, they're dancing and jumping, and you know, the shoes are getting heavy with mud. It was fun. And I just thought this was a cute picture of this little boy there with a Bible storybook as he was reading it. The church operates an orphanage. There are 80 children in the orphanage. They also have, along with it, a school for them to learn. And they have a few other day students who come to the school. No running water, no electricity for the school or the orphanage. Very, very crude, very primitive. But it's about a mile off of the main road. So the school, the students, met us out there on the highway, and they have a small brass band of about 10 people, a couple of trumpets and trombones and a baritone horn, some things like that. And so we had a parade, literally, with a brass band welcoming us, and we walked back to the school. It was pretty exciting. I've had a lot of warm welcomes in my life, but that was probably one of the best. I enjoyed that a lot. There we are walking our way back through. The building in the back is not the orphanage. The orphanage was nowhere near that nice of a building. But also, with Grace along as a young woman, I call her a girl because, well, she's 21, but she's still my baby.
Thanks. Love you too.
But the young girls in the orphanage were quite attracted to her. And so when we were leaving, Mary Sollenberger, she was a little concerned that Grace might not get on the bus. Either she would just decide to stay behind or else the girls there would keep her behind. But anyway, this is Sedrak and his wife, Diana, and the baby Rose. They also operate a nursery school there in the capital city of Kampala. Most of the churches are out in the western part of the country in a very rural area, in small towns. But they do have two congregations in the capital city of Kampala, which is a massively sprawling area that takes hours to get across. I mean, you know, there's a few highways that move along pretty good, but if you're going through town, it's just poke, 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 poke. It just takes you forever to get anywhere. And they drive on the left side of the road, too. Rwanda, they drive on the right side. My joke is, on in Rwanda, they drive on the right side. Uganda, they drive on the left side. And in Congo, they just drive all over the road. And if you'd followed my blog at all, this is Pastor Elisha Cooley. And he and Sedrak had gone on the motorcycle to visit one of the rural churches that had been destroyed in a bad storm. And I was in the building, and you know it wasn't a great loss as far as the building goes, other than the fact it was the place that they had to worship in. And it was gone, so they went out to investigate it to see how they could help them to rebuild. On the way back on the motorcycle, tire blew out on the highway, and Sedrak ended up in the hospital, and Elisha was killed. So it was a very big tragedy, great loss to the church there, but also for his family. He has four young children. Well, now we're going to go to Rwanda, and that's where most of our time was spent. There in Rwanda, in the town of Gisenyi, is where the church is centered at, so to speak. They have their home church there. They had a small building that we built several years ago that was not big enough, and it was kind of at the time they knew it wasn't going to be big enough. They just used the money that they had to build it. And so on that property, they had started building this building. And when Grace and I were there in October, this was what it looked like at that time. Just had four walls up part of the way. When we arrived in January, this is what it looked like. The walls were up. They had a roof on it. And the old church building, which was right next to it, you can just on the left side of the picture, that is what is now the nursery school that Grace helped to start. And there'll be some more pictures of that. This is inside the new building. It's kind of cavernous. The acoustics, in my opinion, are lousy. In their opinion, it's great because you crank up the music as loud as you can, just to the point where it starts to distort. We would turn it up to that point, maybe turn it back so it's not distorted. They turn it up until it distorts, and then they turn it a little bit more. And, of course, they love it loud. And so probably, Scott, till they're all said and done, they'll be as hard of hearing as us old farmers. But all of the cement in that building, for the floor, for the walls, which are, it's a brick, but then they plaster it over with cement, everything is mixed by hand. And, you know, Rodney, I know you have experience with that in Senegal, mixing cement. And we'd done some of that in Haiti there. Rich remembers that, mixing it all by hand. They have so many shovelfuls of this, so many shovelfuls of that, and they mix it up. And this is where they're putting tiles on the floor. The goal is to tile the whole floor of the building, but right now they just have the pulpit stage area done. And this was on Easter Sunday morning. After about a five-hour worship service, they had Love Feast. They had killed a lamb the day before, and we ate it that day. And they had rice and beans and potatoes and
isosi,
yeah, and isombe probably. And there's lots of the fresh fruits and vegetables are fantastic. That was one of the things that we really miss, besides the people. And they used just plain white bread for the communion. And they had a local soft drink called Vitolo that they used for the communion wine. It was red. It worked. It was fine. And just before we left, about a week or so before leaving, I took this picture of the church building. It's really a beautiful building. On the end here, they're going to put a two-story addition, which will be offices and classrooms, because that'll be their kind of denominational center, sort of like a district office type of a place. Also there, the Global Food Initiative of the Church of the Brethren is sponsoring a pig project. We're also doing one in Congo, too, and there's some talk of maybe having one in Burundi eventually. But the purpose of it is that you have poor people who would be able to have their own sow. And so they're getting it started here at this point. And they're just now to that point where they have several families that have a sow in their own possession. And in some cases, they're building kind of a community pig barn where each family would keep their sow there. And that way, you can keep the boar there. And it kind of keeps some accountability. You can kind of check on things. And there's just some concerns and logistics to all of it in terms of feed and how you get people to help with this and the marketing and so forth. But they're working on that. It's all part of the project. Because for one thing, if a family has the pig at their own house and they decide that, we haven't eaten for a while, they just might end up eating their sow. So they're just, trying to kind of determine who's most responsible at this point to be able to do this or that and to work with it in that way. But anyway, I like pigs, so it was a lot of fun for me. Pastor Etienne and his wife both grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And if you're a good Seventh-day Adventist, you don't eat pork. They tend to follow the Old Testament eating habits. Just recently, while we were there, he and his wife started eating pork. And he thanked me for helping him to realize it's probably okay. But he also told me this, and you'll love this, that it's okay to eat pork because Jesus drowned the bad pigs. I thought, well, I'm going to remember that one, I guarantee you. This is the Medane Day Church. A couple of years ago, we had a project where we were helping them to get this building going. The government said you had to use steel posts and rafters when you build this because of the size of it. The Rwandan government's a little more restrictive than a lot of African countries, and so they do have some building code requirements, depending a little bit on which part of the country you live in. So anyway, we were selling pillars, posts for this church, at $250 each. We called it the Pillars of the Church Project. And I'm not sure if Pleasant Ridge was involved in that or not. But anyway, we were able to help them to build this, and that is the building. And this is one of the pastors there on a Sunday morning. This is Pastor Etienne from Rwanda and his mother. She is 96 years old. She almost died in January. She got the second COVID shot, and she got really, really sick. And, she was saying goodbye to everybody, and, the family was all in there. She has, umpteen children and a zillion grandchildren and great-grandchildren. But they're all coming in and saying goodbye, and next thing you know, she's better, and she's doing really well. So this is the Gaseza Church there, and another beautiful place. Well, every church I go to, I think, this is the most beautiful place in the world. And then I go to the next one, and think, well, this one is too, so... But the Gaseza Church is in a really beautiful spot. And Pastor Habamana Clavel Pierre and his wife,
Mama Josephine,
okay, that works. She's the one on the right. They're really lovely people. They speak virtually no English. I remember explaining to them here a couple years ago how we take the tractor out into a field of grass, and with a machine we cut the grass. And then we roll it up into big rolls after it's dry. And then we keep that for in the winter when we don't have any grass to give to the cows. And I remember her looking at me and telling me through an interpreter, "You mean the cows eat that dried up stuff?" She just couldn't believe that. So anyway, every church has three or four choirs, and they all sing every Sunday. Worship services will last anywhere from 3 to 5 hours, depending on when you think that it actually started. Because it starts before everybody gets there, and it's a whole different way of life. And I like this picture because the church was nicely decorated with toilet paper. Maybe they used some of the leftover toilet paper from the pandemic that they had stored up, when everybody was stockpiling. I'm not sure how that happened. But anyway, I'll turn it over to Grace now for a moment. And she's going to talk a little bit about buying bananas and teaching nursery school.
Can I get the microphone?
Oh, well, you can probably talk loud.
I mean, I can probably speak loud enough to be heard. But...
Well, I talk about my bus driver's voice, so.
Teacher voice.
Yeah, that too.
Thank you. So this is at the market, and I am buying bananas. And whenever you go to buy anything, you must argue about the price.
That's expected.
And this is on Good Friday, and there was 12 people, myself included, that were baptized in Lake Kivu. And I had been baptized in Knobsville several years ago, but I wanted to be rebaptized as a recommitment to the Lord and to become a member of the church there.
Grace is now officially a member of the Church of the Brethren in Rwanda.
And this is in nursery school. We have 31 3- to 5-year-olds that are so much personality and energy. And this young man on the right here, his name is Innocent. I will tell you one thing, he is anything but innocent. And Innocent and his brother Kevin, and they are of the same personality. And this is Devin, the devil. And these are twin girls. Their names are Lockie and Lobin. And their father is a moto taxi driver. So he will come to school and pick them up. And he is also a member of the church of the brethren there and sings on the worship team. Oh. School can be exhausting. We are lined up to go into school in the morning. Also, Innocent not being innocent. And Elvis, we have an Elvis. They didn't go anywhere, but it was a good photo shoot. And that man there is David, the head teacher, and Mama Francine. And she's one of the people that I miss the most there. She's one of the very faithful pillars of the church there. And she's there pretty much every day at the church slash school. And she's like the nanny or the auntie that we call her to help the children with the bathroom or, you know, if they want their mama. And there was bricks from the church project that were broken, and so they were, you know, left. And the children discovered them one day and had great fun with them. This is report card day. And the school is in the old church building. And it was one big room. And for one class, it's a little bit too big. And the goal is to have another class in the fall. And we built a wall to help facilitate that. And this is Dad. Well, not you, but your pig.
I don't know how to butcher. They just sort of hack it apart with a machete. And it's just, you know, basically little pieces, and, you know, there's a little piece of meat with a little bit of bone, and or maybe they'll take out a few pieces of meat so that they can, you know, have it boneless, and you put it on a stick and they'll cook it like a brochette, the, you know, shish kebab kind of a thing. And that's, I guess I would say, my preferred way of eating it at that point. But they just, like I say, he's just beating it apart with a machete. That's all he's doing. They tend to butcher their pigs relatively small. I've never seen them butcher a big pig. Like the boars, they don't cut them when they're little. So I guess if you eat the boar when he's still young, it still tastes good. I'm just kind of, I don't know. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about eating boar meat. My great-grandfather had a description of it that I won't use in church. But I did eat boar meat once, and it wasn't very good, of a bigger boar. Anyway, that aside, there was a man there, a member of the church, who was really good with butchering, and he's sort of the grillmeister kind of a guy. You know, he knows how to cook meat really, really well over the charcoal. And that's how most of the cooking there is done, is with charcoal. Some people have gas stoves. There was a gas stove in our house there, but they did most of the cooking over charcoal. That's another thing that I miss, is the smell of eucalyptus charcoal. It just has a really unique aroma to it. So anyway, cows are a very important part of African culture. Everybody wants to have a cow. There's no big farms in this area. The average farm is an acre or two. But everybody wants to have a cow, or they have goats, but they don't usually drink goat milk. But they will drink milk. They usually scald it, since they don't have, you know, like pasteurization, homogenization, and that sort of thing. And they'll feed the cows just about anything. And in this case, they are using banana trees. They're chopping it up with the machete. They use machetes for everything. And they're chopping it apart, and the cows are eating it like eating haylage or, you know, corn salad or something like that. I looked it up on the internet, and it did say that banana trees do make good cow feed. But I can't find anywhere that it gives, you know, the nutrient value, like what's the TDN, you know, what's the net energy of lactation, what's the protein, you know, I can't find any of that stuff. So anyway, there's just a couple of cows with Mount Nyiragongo in the background. The cows there in Rwanda, for the most part, are reflecting several generations of artificial breeding. Because you see a lot of Holsteins, you see Jerseys, you see some Brown Swiss. Holsteins probably the most, just like you would here. And, of course, that increases the milk production over the native cattle. The native cattle, had really handsome horns. And you still see some of them around, especially if you get over into the other countries. But if you want milk, obviously the European breeding is going to help a lot. This is in Uganda. It's a milk truck. As a motorcycle, and this is going past our house in Rwanda. Rwanda, you typically see milk carried on bicycles, and they have some milk co-ops, some processing plants that they will take it to. There's no on-farm cooling. Everything is, they milk the cow and they send it out, maybe similar to how it would have been done here 100 or more years ago. In the village where we live, there is a public water system. And if you can have water in your house, which we did, but it costs like $14 or $15 a month. But if you're living on a dollar a day or $2 a day, you're probably not going to be able to afford that. So you go to the village water outlet, and it's free there. You just have to carry it. And there's a number of these scattered around every village so that you have that capability. These were some beans that were planted around the time that we arrived in January, right across from our house, and they were about ready to harvest when we were leaving in May. And some of the local cabbages, just the fruit, the vegetables, there we were eating fresh stuff all the time. It was really great. You know, broccoli, beans, carrots, onions, I don't know, just go on and on and on. But then you get into some more definitely tropical type things like guava and pineapple and mangoes and all of that. These were onions. They're kind of catty corner across from our house there. We're living in the village. It's right on the edge of a larger town. But everybody pretty much has a patch of some kind. And they will grow things that they will use themselves, but they try to have something to sell as well. And so you see a lot of this where it's going to be being sacked up, it'll be put on the truck, and be taken to market to be sold. And this is looking out the window or out the door of the old church building that's now the schoolhouse. And it's just, I miss seeing that, because I would sit there sometimes while Grace would be teaching or David would be teaching and look out there and see the banana trees and see the mountain off in the distance, and It's something I miss. And if you'd followed my blog at all, you remember the story about a girl named Amina, we called her in there, who had converted from Islam. And her husband left her. She was pregnant at the time. She already had two children. And, well, this is Amina and her baby. The baby's name is Grace. But just a lovely lady. And she sings in a worship team. And I just love watching her sing. You know, she has the baby on her back when she's up there, and just seeing her worship God is a beautiful sight. And knowing, you know, the whole situation, the background she comes out of, all of that, you know, coming from Islam, it's pretty exciting to see. Also in the area, there are some very poor people. There's one tribe called the Batwa, and they're, for the most part, all very poor and uneducated. And so we have a weekly feeding program where they get bread and milk. This was another off time that we went there, and they all got worm medicine whether they needed it or not, I guess would be how I would put it. But like you can see, the child there has a spot on its head. So I said to Karamuna, one of our pastors who's also a nurse, I said, "Is that ringworm?" He said, "No, it's some kind of a skin infection, but it's not that." So I don't know what it was, but it looked nasty. And the way you buy your airtime or your electricity is kind of odd. I mean, airtime, like for your cell phone, you wait till it runs out, and then you buy more. You know, we want this seamless service. Well, they don't have that. We're sitting there one evening at Papa Timo's house, and Papa Timo really loves watching soccer. They call it football. We're watching a soccer game. I don't know who was playing. You know, a couple of the European teams. Electricity goes off. You know, the house is dark. So he with a flashlight, he's there with his phone, trying to buy airtime, or to buy electricity, I mean, over the phone. He comes up with a long digit code of numbers. So we go outside, and you have to climb up a ladder. They never put these down low because the goats or the children would wreck them. So the boy who works there to help take care of the goats, he climbs up the ladder, and he starts punching the numbers in while Papa Timo reads it to him. Well, this happened one day at school. Well, the school does not require any electricity, but there were some workers in the church building working on this floor tile. Well, they needed some power tools to run. So Mama Francine, she goes down to the local airtime vendor and buys the electricity off of him. And so then she comes back with a scrap of paper that had been ripped off with some numbers scrawled on it. So I read the numbers to David while he climbs up on the side of the church and punches them in. Electric came back on, and the workers went back to work. You know, it's the whole different way of doing it. It works. You know, to say that our way is so much better than theirs, well, their way is more fun. And this was a vehicle was broke down in the middle of the street, and it sat there for a couple of days, jacked up till they got it fixed. And, you know, you just drive around it, walk around it, whatever. And Grace and I would go out for a walk pretty much every day. We'd walk a couple miles and come back. And we would kind of laugh and joke together about local events and, you know, some of the cultural stuff we would see. And we're just hoping that nobody understood English. they brought the maize, the corn, in. And this was some of Pastor Etienne's maize that they had grown. It's three pretty good-sized truckloads that they'd brought in, and we had to husk it all by hand, and then you hang it up to dry. And then you shell it by hand. And this all takes a lot of time. Of course, I'm an American. I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, we have a machine that could do this. But they're having a great time. You know, they're laughing together, talking together. You know, people come in and help. Sit down for a few minutes and work at it, and maybe they go on to do something else, but then somebody comes in later on and sits down for an hour and helps, and it's actually a lot of fun. And I like this picture. It is Grace and her friend Clara Lise, and then the blue roof is the church building, the new church building there in the background. This is one of our pastors. I mentioned the name Karamuna. He is a nurse, but he's also going to medical school to become a doctor. And that's his wife, Judith, and their little boy, Sammy. And Sammy's probably one of our favorite children from the nursery school.
I don't have favorites.
You don't have favorites. Well, I do. But Sammy's just the kind of boy, you just want to take him and have him sit on your lap and say, can I take you home? Just a really sweet little boy. But Karamoon is one of our pastors, and so he's, you know, has a lot of responsibility, a lot of work there before him. And so, you know, just, you know, pray for the churches, pray for the leaders there. This is just walking down from one of the church buildings. This is the one that had the toilet paper in it. And there are thousands of acres of tea grown there in Rwanda. I have no idea, you know, where it ends up, whether it all goes to Europe or some of it comes here. I don't know how that works. I don't think about tea marketing. But there's just thousands of acres of tea. A lot of coffee there, too. But the tea is what's really more picturesque. The Sunday before we left, we left on a Thursday, and this was Sunday, they showered Grace and I with gifts. You'd think we'd been there for 40 years, not 4 months. But they were really kind to us. And this is some fabric that was given to Grace. And you already have a dress made out of that, right?
Not that.
Not that piece? Okay. But there's a couple other pieces they had given her. Mm-hmm. And they gave me a cane and a hat. And it's sort of their word for old man is umusaza. And so I am the umusaza pastor. Pastor Krisi. So I have my hat and cane now. I just want to thank you for your support here, in particular at Pleasant Ridge, with what you had given there towards the Bibles. And, you know, we'll be in continued communication. I don't want to sound like I'm just going to come back asking for more money, but with the idea that, you know, you'll know what's going on there, and if there is opportunities to respond to that, well, you know, we'll certainly take those things into consideration. So again, thank you for your prayers, your support, for listening here today, and the opportunity to share this with you. So thank you very much. And Grace, anything more you need to say?
Thank you all for not falling asleep.
Chris, did you want to answer any questions?
I'd be glad to. Or I'll try, put it that way. Anybody have any questions or any comments you want to make? Well, that it's still there. I mean, we were able to talk a little more in the language, but it ends up being more like being able to greet each other. We're getting better at that. But, you know, as far as really having any kind of a deep understanding to talk with people, that's still pretty difficult. And we do rely on a translator a lot for that. We've learned how to go into the market or someplace like that and kind of go in there cold, so to speak, and not really know anybody. And we're able to usually communicate enough to buy something and to argue with them about the price of it. Like, oya, oya, oya means no.
You mentioned China. It's too much money.
Mm-hmm. A lot of some of the women do, and most of the women don't. Most of the women have pretty short hair. But like in church services, they typically will have some kind of covering on their head. So it's a little harder to tell with the women. But the men, so it's either very short or shaved. Even children, little girls, typically will have shaved heads. Which is, in that case, is more of a, you know, like a lice insect kind of thing.
Oh, you said about electricity. Do they have to buy so many hours or what?
Yeah, they would buy, like, say, the equivalent of $20 worth. It'd be so many kilowatts. And that would be till that's used up. Sort of like you would buy for your cell phone, you would buy like 1,000 minutes. And when those minutes are used up, then you got to buy more. And that'd be the same way with electricity. And that's what they do with their cell phones, or even to buy gigabytes for a smartphone. You buy so many gigabytes, and when it's all gone, then you go, you buy some more. Sometimes you can do it over the phone, but there's every corner of every village has an airtime vendor. And there was one there, Joyce and I like to laugh about, there in our village, that like we'd see him anywhere, he would always come up to Grace and he would shake her hand, and he would always shake her hand for a long time. But yeah, that's pretty much how it's done. You buy so much, and then when it's gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm.
Do they have issues with the like the Book of Ryan or those type of real life that's in that area?
They don't. Now, I'm not saying that something like that couldn't happen. I mean, they had the issue there in 1994 when there was a Rwanda. The genocide of the Hutus and the Tutsis, you know, they've had issues, but at present there's nothing like that going on.
Is there much, you talked about the one lady that's Muslim and her husband, is there much disagreement there or any kind of persecution or anything like that?
There's no persecution per se. I mean, within family, there could be, or there wouldn't. In that case, there was. Like, her husband left, and of course, his family won't have anything to do with her or the children. Now, her mother and stepfather, they're still Muslim, but they took her in, and we met them, and they were kind to people as far as that goes, but they were still Muslim. I'm not sure what the percentage of people that's Muslim there is. But it's a relatively small percent. Like you get into northern Nigeria, for instance, it's like over half is Muslim and less than half is Christian. So that kind of tips the balance the other way and makes it harder for the Christian. Well, here, it's probably more like 90 to 10. So it's a relatively small Muslim minority that, I hate to say it this way, but it keeps them in check. I mean, that sounds kind of a crude way of putting it, but that's, you know, it kind of, there is definitely that the Christian presence is a lot stronger there.
What was that due to missionaries all along, or why so many Christians?
I guess that for whatever reason, the Muslims didn't push in there like they had some other places. Like, you get over on the coast, like Kenya, Tanzania, there's a really strong Muslim presence there. And you get across northern Africa coming down, like in northern Nigeria, for instance, northern Ghana, places like that, West Africa, there's the further north you get, the more Muslims there are. The further south you get, the more Christians there are.
What about native tribe religions? Are there
Yeah, not too much in Rwanda. That seems to be more of a thing of the past. There are witch doctors, but nothing that we've really encountered. And I don't think they have a whole lot of influence now like they do in maybe some other parts of Africa. Wayne. Yeah, THARS is run by a man named David Nyonzima. It's a fairly big NGO in Burundi, and they only work in Burundi. It means Trauma Healing and Reconciliation Services. David comes from a Quaker, evangelical friends background. He's a really great guy. He's not Brethren. He has some interest in the Brethren. He's the one that gave the Brethren book to Pastor Bekene, which is kind of interesting. And that's a whole other realm I don't want to get into. But he has this STARS organization. So they're doing some community development type things, and they use the Farming God's Way as kind of the tool for that. And probably about half of the teaching in a Farming God's Way training session is theological in nature. I've been through a training session over in Kenya several years ago, and Dolores and I went to one in Indiana last summer, and we both really appreciated that teaching and the emphasis that there is on God's creation and how man has fallen and sinned, and how God in his redemption brings Christ into the story, but it changes us, and it also changes then how we will farm so that we're better stewards of what God has given us. Any other questions? Okay, well, I guess I will turn it back to you, Mac.